parent show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor the parent show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia Elcoury.
And I'm Cathy Weston. Very warm welcome tonight.
Tonight's show is all about our children's well-being. Now, it's a word we hear about all the time, and what does it actually mean? And why is well-being so important, and what is our role as parents in generating a sense of well-being for our children? Tonight we've got two early years experts, that is, when we say early years, that's 0 to 5. We've got Sally Graham, who's a principal lecturer from the School of Education at the University of Hertfordshire, and we've got Shirley Heyman, who's the owner and manager of Riverbanks Nursery School in Harpenden. Sally, can we start with you? What does the term well-being mean, and why has it suddenly become so important to the government and in everyday language?
It's really interesting. It's becoming a more and more popular word, isn't it? And I suppose what I would say that it really kind of describes the quality of someone's life. And of course, there's lots of different aspects to people's lives. There's the kind of moral, social, economic aspects. And we would have perhaps in the past talked about the social exclusion or maybe the economic disadvantage of families and people. And we now have really sort of encompassed that in that word well-being. It's very interesting, actually, when you ask me why it's so important. We were, as a country, rather shamed about 5 years ago because, I don't know if you remember, there was a report that came out from UNICEF, and it was very shocking because it actually, the findings from this report, that we were, out of 21 countries, the children in the UK came out one from the bottom. We were 20th. And that's really a damning report and damning findings. Unfortunately, what they found out and from their research was that they said that we had a materialistic culture and that our children were basically time poor, that they weren't having enough time that they were spending with their families. And families, they felt, was a key place to develop that well-being. Now, it's very good timing for your programme today because literally today a new report has been published by the Children's Society. It's called the Good Childhood Report, and it's reporting on research done 7 years ago, a very large piece of research with 30,000 children aged between 8 and 16. And again, they have found out that, well, most children are happy in their lives. They do have a good sense of well-being, but unfortunately 1 in 11, or we could say 9% of the population of those children are not happy. That's 500,000 children.
Yeah.
It's a lot of children, isn't it, when you think of that, 500,000 children. Now, you ask me why that's important. Now, research, as you can see, it needs to be taken over a period of time. Well-being is quite a newish concept, as I said, but there has been a lot of research into social exclusion and disadvantage. And that research shows that the greater the disadvantage or exclusion, unfortunately, increases children's chances of then being engaged in criminal behaviour, having educational failure, health issues, teenage pregnancies, substance misuse, all those sort of things. I mean, scary areas, and these are predictors of that, unfortunately. And that's why the government have paid attention to this, because I don't know if you, of course, when you think about that, that costs the government a lot of money.
Yeah.
So actually dealing with these children when they've grown up and they've entered into the criminal system, you know, gone to prison, engaged with the police, or we've got drug problems, young mums, all of that. So this is seen as a preventative measures, all the measures that we can do perhaps in schools or in the health system or in any way in our families.
Yeah, and actually it sounds, the first thing you mentioned was family, and it makes sense that that's where the whole initiative starts. But I suppose we need guidance, don't we, as parents, about how to instill a sense of well-being in our children, and I don't think there's a single parent who doesn't want to do that. We just need to know how we do it.
And I think paying attention to the factors that, you know, we off the top of your head as a parent, it's very difficult to think about what well-being means, but just remembering the factors that matter. Shirley Heyman, you run a nursery school in Harpenden. So locally, you know, you're in touch with our children, you're with our children all day, every day. What would you say in response to what Sally has said as a practitioner, in your workplace every day? How does well-being, why does it matter?
Yeah, thanks, Kathy, and thanks for inviting me back again.
It's always a pleasure, Shirley.
Thank you. You know, over two decades of watching and working with, you know, young children, local children, who I now see, you know, much older, so it's interesting to see how well-being affects children over the years. So I know teenagers as well who are suffering with, you know, low self-esteem and not happy well-being. But what I'd like to say is that it should, in my belief, and I'm so passionate about this, it should underpin everything the nursery, the school, the secondary school, even the universities are doing. You know, we want to see children who are laughing, who are cheerful, who are spontaneous, who are expressing themselves, mixing easily, and having a general sort of sense of self-assurance, and they look comfortable in their own bodies and in the place that they're in. So that's what I'd hope you'd see if you came to my nursery. That would be evidence of positive well-being. But it doesn't just happen. It's input from parents. And if we get time, I'd really like to suggest one thing that I think parents should Google and look at.
Oh, we like things we can Google.
Yes.
What can we Google?
Okay, right, parents, go and Google it if you don't know it, and I'm sure many people do. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Okay, it's easy to find. Maslow, Maslow, hierarchy of needs, and it just talks about children's basic needs, actually not even just children, humans, basic needs in order to feel safe, secure, and therefore for, you know, higher skills and things to take place after that.
A Maslow's hierarchy of needs isn't sort of scary theory. It's a triangle. I've seen it a couple of times,
I've
isn't
it,
Sally?
Yeah.
It's got layers to it. And it's easy for us to just, it's the sort of thing you could stick on your fridge and just have a little think every day, is it, Sally, do you reckon?
I definitely think that. And to sort of realise, actually, if you haven't met those basic needs, as it says on the bottom, hunger and thirst and sleep, and working your way up, you're not going to then, as a child, be able to be socially adept at having friendships and developing a sense of belonging and relationships. You do need to kind of work your way up. And, really good start. I like that one. I wondered if I could just add something to which I think might be helpful with that hierarchy of needs. And that is perhaps, again, these findings from the Children's Report today, the Children's Society Report. They actually came up with five key findings, and I think they're going to be really useful. The first one is about the quality of the relationships. Shirley, that's exactly what you were saying. You were saying that we need to focus in all areas of education on the quality of those relationships. And that's really important. And it's good advice, again, for parents, but not to feel they're isolated. It's not just them out there. It's the relationships between all of us.
And are you talking as well about relationships in your nursery school, for example, between staff and children as well?
Yeah.
All relationships in their lives.
Yeah. If the practitioners and the teachers' well-being is poor, how are they going to nurture and, you know, ensure that our young people are feeling safe, secure, loved, you know, fitting in?
And in nursery, and I know Shirley does this, we actually, so how do you put that into practice? And you might see that in the use of key workers, key people who can actually bond with the children, develop deeper relationships, maybe through home visits. Again, that's a way. So there's lots of things that are put into practice with that primary kind of outcome, that wanting to get that relationship really secure and tight. The next one is about children feeling listened to. Shirley's shaking her head, and I know she agrees with me
here. Passionately, because a lot of practitioners now will be talking. If you go into nurseries, you'll hear them saying, we want to listen to the child's voice. So that's why you parents are being asked to tell us, what do you do at home? What is your child like? What doesn't he like? Because we take hold of that information and we weave that into the opportunities we provide for your children. Because if the children feel they're being listened to, that just increases their emotional well-being.
Can I just ask for concrete examples, because I hear what you're saying, and I understand it's important. So on a day-to-day basis, when you're driving along in the car or walking back from nursery, take those opportunities?
Yeah, and I'm just going to expand on, because we probably use a shorthand there of saying listen to. And it's a way of us, by listening, children have lots of languages. It's not just spoken language. It's by listening, we also mean watching and being engaged with. So children have a language of movement or of dance or of laughing or swimming or all sorts of things. And so by listening to them, you give them your full attention.
Yeah.
You are there in the moment with them.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about the shopping list. And you're actually, and it isn't that you're just, that you actually need to be saying anything.
Right.
You don't need to be plying them with questions, but you are there fully engaged in the moment.
And how important is eye contact in this, in those kind of scenarios?
Well, you know, that's one of the skills we want to encourage in young children, isn't it? To make eye contact. But equally, you know, in my experience, if we've got little people who are on the autistic spectrum, they don't want to be making eye contact. So, you know, you've got to be sensitive to that, Lydia, I think. But certainly encourage eye contact. And when you're listening to your children in the widest sense, you know, watch their body language. You don't have to be face to face holding their shoulders. For a teenager, I'd suggest you sit in the car, you know, mum or dad's driving, and let the teenager look out the passenger window.
So
you may get more of them.
On.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want that kind of intense having look at my face, do they?
Or walk, I don't know if you think about this, but walking beside someone
absolutely
can be actually a really good time, because you're not looking with the teenager face to face with them, but you are totally there in that moment with them.
Now, I know both of you, both ladies have had, you've got years, vast experience of actually working with children of different ages through primary as well. Give us a few ideas, because I think parents are very, very interested. Parents focus a lot on behaviour. You know, they're terrified of bad behaviour. They're interested in bad behaviour, why it happens, how it occurs. What link can you both make? Any case studies that you can think of where children's well-being has directly affected their behaviour?
Well, you know, we're all aware, aren't we? We quote it, but do we understand it? Behaviour is a form of communication for children. They're telling us something. So when a child suddenly starts wetting him or herself, and they didn't usually do it, and you thought they were potty trained, they're telling you something. Now, obviously, you check, have they got a, you know, an infection? But if they haven't, why is that happening? Is it because mum and dad are arguing at home? Is it because dad's gone off abroad for 3 months and the daughter's thinking, where's my dad gone and is he coming back? You know, is it suddenly dad's lost his job and mum and dad are really stressed, or parents are really stressed? The child's picking up on that. So behaviours, if that's the kind of thing you're meaning, a change in behaviour, Kathy, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Are communicating. So look out for sudden changes in behaviour. And in nursery, you know, we strive to know our children really well. If we see a sudden change in behaviour, we're asking why, what's happened in the home or in that child's heart, mind, that's changed what they would normally do. If you're talking about behaviours where parents are worried, you know, that they're spitting, kicking, fighting, again, they're trying to communicate something to us. And, you know, if you've got somebody that can, that child trusts, so whether it be the nursery teacher, grandma, the babysitter, the godmother, whoever, you know, maybe they can look from the outside and give parents some kind of heads up as to what's going on in that family unit and why the child's behaviour has suddenly changed. We're not talking here about temper tantrums for two-year-olds, which obviously, you know, then kicking at different, you know, and at 13 they get difficult again, and at 17 they get difficult because we're changing emotionally and physically. But we're talking about sudden changes of behaviour that we just don't get. Why are they doing that? You know, are they hungry? Is it that?
Yeah.
So back to Maslow's hierarchy
of
needs. You can go to your checklist on the fridge and have a little think about it, perhaps. And is it possible, Sally, in primary classroom, in a nursery setting, to what do teachers do? Because parents are curious as to what you guys would do as practitioners in those situations. You've talked to parents, talked to carers. Is that the first step?
Well, it's a little bit more, I suppose, the starting point is actually the whole environment.
So it's really important that one creates a kind of stable, safe, secure environment where children actually feel that there is a kind of consistency in the levels of kind of harmony that's happening there. There isn't sudden changes of temperament, and also just simple things like changing the furniture around, changing the routines. Consistency is really important, particularly for many children now who have very chaotic lives. We can be a bit of an oasis, really. So I think that's really, really important. The other thing for me is always key is about children being involved. It's not done to them. They're involved in the whole decision process. So you might, I'm sure in the nurseries your children go to, they have probably a self-registering process where the child arrives and instead of some adult reading out a list, they've got to go and find maybe somebody.
Right. Is that happening? Yeah, it certainly does.
Oh, yes. Right. Okay. Now, that's that whole kind of, that's been thought through very carefully. It's trying to give your child a sense of responsibility that they can have control of it.
Yep.
So you parents can do the same at home. What are you doing at home to make them more able? Can they get their own breakfast things out? Can they clear the table? Okay, it may take longer, but actually you're teaching them that they can actually look after themselves.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's empowering.
It's a very good reminder because it's so easy to just take
over.
Them as total babies and do everything and feel like that's what mothers should do. But actually maybe we should just reinterpret it as, you know, helping them to become independent, and that it's about their self-esteem at the end of the day.
You're actually showing you value them. You value them
and trust them.
Yeah,
and respect them, isn't it? Mm, you kind of
that they're capable, and you see the potential that they have.
Yeah,
and
a great one we have is I get my son to bring the milk bottles out and put them in the holder because he can open the front door, which is obviously not a good thing. But he can open the front door and go out and put it in, and it's. He's so proud of himself for being able to do it, you know, and it's such a small thing, but you can see he likes it. But you've got to keep thinking of examples of how to kind of integrate them, because it's so easy as a mother to become a control freak.
I think it's quite as well to take example if your child is at a good nursery school.
Yeah.
I mean, my son, his nursery is great, and he was cutting things with scissors and chopping cucumber in the kitchen. And I said, "Oh, he's chopping cucumber." And he said, "But I do this at nursery. I can do it. I can do it. And, you know,
keep up to speed.
Because the teachers often have the courage to try things out that we don't. And, you know, you should take your lead as well.
And also have the patience to sit down and teach them how to use
it. And the time, which is, you know, that's what we're being paid to do, is to spend time and give your children opportunities. Can I just take it up a few years? For teenagers, I let my nearly 16-year-old do the internet shopping every week. She chooses what we eat. She knows the credit card number. She sorts it all.
Gosh.
I mean, it's great because it's taken that responsibility off me, but she has some control over the food. Well, she has all the control. The food that's in our fridge. Consequently, she is an amazing cook.
Gosh.
Because I've given her that trust and that freedom to do that. You know, and I know many grown-up men that wouldn't know how to order the weekly groceries.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think this actually probably leads quite well into the book we're going to be talking about a little later, really, because and we hear Oliver James talking about that. But from what I understand about love bombing, it is this giving over kind of time and space and sharing the responsibility for that time with your child.
That's
and
right.
I guess probably that's what we aim to do.
We aim to do
yes. that in an early year setting. Always slightly hard because we've got a lot of children, but that is our aim.
That's right. The title of the book is Love Bombing, Reset Your Child's Emotional Thermostat. So we're going to be speaking to Oliver in a few minutes, Lydia.
That's it, exactly. We've just a couple more questions for the ladies before we let you go. What do you both believe makes a difference to child's lives in terms of their levels of happiness and their ability to learn?
Okay, I think it's really down to those relationships. I think they're absolutely key. And if they're consistent relationships, I think changes. That's where we see, as educationalists, which we see the difference. So it's the consistency in those relationships. And you asked just a minute ago, and Shirley was asking about what that looks like in the classroom. And I think, for me, the biggest indicator for me of low well-being is the level of engagement of children. And
what do you mean by that?
Well, the way that whether they're engrossed, whether they can actually, you know, be completely engaged in whatever it is, if it's play or whatever it is, so that they don't even notice distractions going on around them. Now, that sadly I've experienced that some children are totally unable to do that. They're like butterflies. They flip from one thing to another. They're not necessarily got bad behaviour and not necessarily causing disturbance. And Shirley agrees with that. But they never stay engaged in anything for very long. And I imagine in their head it's because there's a lot of thinking going on, so they can't give their attention.
And Shirley, can we just talk about that for a little bit, that sort of level of involvement that children have in their play? I mean, I think parents are often guilty of interrupting them.
Yeah.
So parents are terrified of them being bored or having nothing, when actually if they're very, very quiet, and parents often interrupt. But actually, what's your experience about, what's the relationship between that involvement in play and their learning?
It's crucial, Kathy, I would say, to have deep level learning, sustained learning. Children need to be given time, you know, just like you want to be given time when you're, researching something new. You don't want to be interrupted all the time. And so even though we want routines for children at home and in the school, you need to be flexible as a parent and as a carer. So if you see a child's really engaged and busy, leave them. Give them an extra 3 minutes. Don't say, no, you've got to stop, it's bath time, if it's possible. I know that's hard in a busy household, but in a busy nursery, I still would, passionately encourage my staff team, and they do it. They do it. We change our routines to meet the children. And, just one thing I'd like to say is, please don't be going in and saying to your teachers, my child needs to be reading. Actually, what your child needs is to have high levels of, emotional well-being, because that will lead to eventually, deep, sustained learning. I can't tell you how passionate I feel about this, how passionately I feel.
Can I just bring it back a step? Sally, you mentioned relationships are really important. Now, it's within your power as a parent to make your relationship with your child positive. But then as soon as they're outside the house, obviously they're having relationships with other people, and you can't control them. But how can you reinforce them indirectly? Like, for example, if when your kids come home and they're upset about something, and what's the right tack to take? I mean, should you be their confidant, or should you let them figure it out by themselves, or what do you suggest?
Well, quite controversial, because lots of different people have different views maybe about that, but I would say it's back to that listening. It isn't that I'm going to listen and then necessarily give advice or interpret it in my way, but just giving a child the time and the space and really listening to what they're saying, I think will allow them actually to work out some solutions to what they want to do. But I think, and obviously if you've got concerns as a parent that something's wrong and you need to intervene, I mean, that's what being a parent is really, isn't it? And there are times when you might think that. But like we do the same. When I have worries about friendships or something, I talk to somebody else about it. Children do the same. I'll tell you what they also do is they often act it out in their play. So if you don't hear it coming out of their mouth, you see it in what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
So watch their play, and if you see them doing something, talk to them about it.
Yeah.
Find out why they're, doing something particular.
And get to the bottom of it. I mean, is it really, should we be doing that? Should we be, involving ourselves to that level in our kids' lives? Or is that too much?
I would say it's really up to the individual.
Right.
But I can't say that. But I think, yes, I do.
Yeah.
If my children are upset emotionally, I'm the parent I think I should be there for.
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff. Ladies, thank you so much. I hope we'll have time at the end maybe to come back and get your thoughts after our interview with Oliver James. But for the moment, Shirley and Sally, thanks a million for your thoughts and your advice.
Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
Now, we've just got a little bit of music, and then afterwards we'll be talking to the author of Love Bombing, Oliver James. Welcome back to the Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. As promised now, we hopefully should have on the line Oliver James, who is the author of Love Bombing. I'm just going to test the line. Sorry. Oliver, are you there?
Hello.
Hi there. Hello, Oliver, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Now, Oliver, I
your book has just been released recently, Love Bombing is the name of it. And you say of your book, love bombing will reduce the time you spend imposing limits and nagging. Now, I absolutely love the sound of that. And it draws me right in. So tell us what love bombing exactly is.
Well, it's really just, it's a very simple idea that needn't really cost time or money much. A period of time alone with your child, offering them unlimited love and control, an intense, condensed experience of those things. And it works for a wide variety of common problems, as severe or mild, from defiant, even violent aggression to shyness, or trouble sleeping or underperformance at school. And the idea is very simple. You say to a child, right, in about a week's time, we're going to go and we're going to spend a period in which you're going to decide exactly what we want to do. And we'll make a list of all the things that they are. Now, this, you're going to have to decide in advance what you can practically do, because, of course, about 100 parents have done it, and they're very ingenious in the way they've colonized it. But quite a few decide to go away for 24 hours or 48 hours, maybe swapping with their parents just to get into a different place, or if they can afford it, go to a B&B or a hotel. And during that time, the child is completely in control. The child tells you what they want to do, and you do it. And during that time, you, as much as possible, tell them that you love them. And then when you get back, you have a sort of half hour, ideally a half hour top up every evening, if you can manage that, although of course it can be very difficult to do. And what's amazed me really is the extent to which, when I've recommended doing that to children, it seems to have a very dramatic effect on a very wide variety of problems.
And so it's a bit like a timeout, but not as a punishment, more as a kind of a reinforcement or reward, something that, fun that you can do together with your child.
Yeah, I mean, the key thing is that most parents find very, you know, very enlightening. It seems to change the parent as much as the child, is giving the child the experience of control and also of unconditional love. And there are all sorts of techniques that recommend unconditional love. But remember, I'm not talking about a complete collapse of boundaries the rest of the time in normal life. I talk about creating an emotional zone where just the two of you are together and the child feels really in control and really safe and loved.
Is it more about crisis management? Because I suppose that instinctively you think surely parents should be, there should be a more sort of sustainable love bombing throughout a child's life rather than these periods of time where they get this luxurious time one-to-one with a parent.
You'd think that, but you see, I would reserve the term love bombing for this peculiar, special emotional zone. What you do the rest of the time, there are many books that have tried to describe, you know, what to do, and obviously the basic thing is to try and provide love and provide boundaries, and obviously it depends on the age of the child. What you do with a baby necessarily the same as what you do with a toddler, and necessarily the same as what you do with a child and middle childhood. But the idea here is that you're taking a child aged three to early puberty, and really encouraging them to become a toddler again. It's the technique has a long tradition in various disciplines of basically encouraging a child to regress and to have an experience of feeling very secure and very much in control, which it may not have had earlier on, or there could be many reasons, and it doesn't really matter. You don't have to go into the reasons why the child has the problems that they have. And pretty much all children do have problems, so I mean, this technique can be used with almost any child. I would recommend almost everybody to try it with their child.
And I suppose for a lot of parents, it seems a bit counterintuitive to deal with the situation with a difficult child by turning around and actually lavishing loads of attention on them. And it must, I mean, just as a human being, it must be hard to kind of turn around and kind of go, I'm really cross with you. I want to punish you, but I'm going to try this new technique. Is there a bit of awkwardness at the beginning, and how do you overcome that?
Because obviously, yes, I mean, in the book, I describe 20 cases, and in many of them, the parents, and particularly the mother, has reached the point with the child where they're, you know, only in some cases, the child has got to 8 or 9 or 10 and is quite big, a boy, and is really quite frightening. And the mother thinks very hard about whether or not she wants to spend much time on her own with this child who's tormenting her.
Yeah.
But the accounts of the stories are quite astonishing. I mean, originally I developed this technique because I was doing three series for the This Morning ITV Richard and Judy show. And on the first day, they said to me, we're going to take you to see a child who's got problems and spend the day with their family. You've got to, at the end of the day, tell the parents what to do, and then in 2 weeks' time, we're going to come back and the child is going to be cured. And I said, ha, right, hum. And I really was very hard-pressed to think what on earth how this was going to work. But then I happened to read a scientific paper, which is an account of 70-odd cases, where they'd done a more extreme version of what I'm describing in a residential setting in America, and with extraordinary results. So I thought, well, you know, it can't be hurt to try something, to adapt this and try some version of it. And that was where it started. That was back in 2004, and anybody who saw the TV programs could see for themselves what dramatic effect technique had.
Sorry, Oliver. Just a quick question. One of our listeners, does link to this, has read Love Bombing and says you only mention one parent. Which is best, mother or father, or does it matter? And he's written, is one-on-one with your child better than a love bomb day with both parents?
No, it definitely needs to be one parent, I think. And in the vast majority of cases where it's been done, and the 100-odd parents who've done it, it's been the mother. And I suppose because of the way our society is organised, unfortunately, in the vast majority of cases, it is mother who's been the main carer of the child during the early years, and who the child seems to want to get this experience with. Not saying it should be like that, but it does seem to be that's the way it is. Yeah.
Oliver, he's also written, is it vital to say I love you all the time, or would a what I love about you kind of thing be equally effective? I think that's a good question, because the words I love you, you know, you sort of say them to your children, they look completely nonplussed. So yeah. Why are they such powerful words, and is it more about the context in which you say them?
Well, I think saying what it is you love about the child is obviously always a good idea, but I think it's not so much the exact words you use as the tone, and it's not. And of course, it is quite difficult to feel love for a child who's been behaving absolutely appallingly for months or even years on end. But nearly all parents, in my experience, do love their child and really want the best for their children, and have done their very best to make their children prosper as much as possible. So that's one of the beauties of this technique, is it seems to bring that feeling out in the parent. And it really does seem to reset the child's emotional thermostat. Things like the cortisol levels, the fight-flight hormone that's secreted when you're feeling threatened. A lot of children have unstable or destabilized cortisol levels, or got them too high, or they're blunted. And at the end of a love bombing weekend, they come back really very different. Children with ADHD, children who are very aggressive, through to children who are shy, through to children who don't want to go to school, who can't sleep. A variety of ways in which cortisol problems can be expressed. Equally, though, it seems to reset the parents' thermostat. So the parent actually ends up remembering why it's glad it had this child and why they love it. And how they say the love, it's not which words they use, it's being able to feel the love and express it. That's what really matters.
And Oliver, another question. I mean, I don't question that it works, but why does it work? Is it because we were talking about before we interviewed you on with our studio guests about the relationship with parents? Does this work because basically the most important relationship is a child's relationship with its parents?
Yes. I mean, a lot of people have contacted me, for example, saying, should we do it if we're fostering or adopting? And it's no good doing it really until you've got a strong attachment with the child. So that's going to be the parent in most cases. It's not really... children have an incredibly strong drive to please their parents. A lot of parents listening to this might say, "Really? I've noticed it recently with my little Ricky or little Jill. They don't appear to want to please me at all." But actually, they do. They have a very strong desire to please us, and they want to. They ultimately want to feel. Nothing more in the world that do they want than to feel loved by it. And that,
Oliver, one of the things we were very impressed with reading your book was you're very honest about the times that there's lots of case studies featured where it hasn't worked. And
well,
I think they were
yeah.
I thought that was great, you know.
I find that chapter one of the most interesting, chapter 10, the last chapter, is four cases.
Yeah.
Where in three of the cases the love bombing worked, but the problem was that the parents, when they got home, you know, the family setting when they got home didn't meant that the child very quickly relapsed back.
Yeah.
And that was, there were cases like a mother, there was one mother who was very over controlling, and she found it very difficult to let the child have control. There was another case where the siblings were seriously stigmatizing and really very aggressive towards the child, and as soon as they got home, the siblings weighed in again. And then another case where the parents, and this is, of course, you know, a common problem, but there's a lot of parental disharmony. And parental disharmony is incredibly upsetting for children. And there's actually very good scientific evidence, which I report in the book. Although it's very far from being scientific, because it's very, very self-help type. But I do describe briefly the evidence that cortisol levels in children of disharmonious parents are often very raised. Of course, it does depend on the quality of the early care, how much they're raised. So a child who had a very good early experience is less put out by parental disharmony in later life than a child who had a poor early care.
So they may be more resilient to disharmony when it
exactly.
happens.
Exactly.
Sorry, I have to ask, by disharmony, people are probably thinking, oh, I argued in front of the kids last night. What do you mean?
What I mean is I'm talking about situations where I'm talking about not the normal situation, which is... in which children, it's completely normal to hear children overhear parents swearing at each other, cursing each other, getting furious with each other occasionally, sometimes or even quite often. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, you know, which unfortunately though is still very common, is, you know, where the parents are at each other's throats and basically are beginning to hate each other's guts, and in some cases have got separated and some kids haven't, but where there is a really nasty atmosphere in which both parents are gunning for each other, and there may or may not be violence they're witnessing, but certainly a lot of hatred.
Great. Oliver, thank you so much. We're actually running out of time, and for any of our listeners, we are having a competition for a copy of Oliver's book, Love Bombing, Reset Your Child's Emotional Thermostat. The question is on our website, and we'll also be Facebooking and tweeting it in just a few minutes. Oliver, thank you very much indeed for joining us this evening.
No, pleasure. And anyone who wants to contact, do let me know if you're a parent and you try it. I'm very eager to hear how you get on.
Great stuff. Well, we'll filter any stories back to you, or put listeners in touch.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Oliver.
Have a lovely evening.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neave include specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome back to The Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, thank you to our interviewee, Oliver James, and his book, Love Bombing, is available on Amazon, I believe, if you'd care to buy it. So we're still joined in the studio by our two guests. We have Shirley Heyman, who is the owner and manager of Riverbanks Nursery in Harpenden. And we've got Sally Graham, who is principal lecturer from the School of Education at the University of Hertfordshire. Thank you very much for staying with us, ladies.
Thank you. Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah, indeed, indeed. And what is your experience been of difficult behavioural issues like Oliver James was talking about? Did it ring true what he was saying?
Yeah, it does. And I can speak from two experiences, one being a parent myself, but also being a teacher in a primary classroom or an early years classroom. And it's interesting because I was translating what he was saying into how I might be as a teacher. And it's interesting because I probably did, or I do exactly the same. And that is, give the child who is showing me this kind of different behaviour, I give them my full attention. Now,
clearly I'm not going to, as a teacher, go around telling I love the child all the time, but basically I show them that, I demonstrate to them that actually I try and find always the time when they're doing good behaviour and make a point of praising that, and actually I focus and try and build that relationship with that child, and that always seemed to work for me.
And I think one of the things I've been reminded of is that I know that parents, mums often have big chats about which nursery to choose and why. God, we've always had those conversations, Lydia, about, you know, you go in and you view nurseries and you think, oh, this is a nice environment, but actually, and they've got nice toys. What really matters from what I'm learning from this conversation is the relationships at the nursery between the caregivers and the children. I mean, I know you've got a bit of a cough, Shirley, but can you try and comment on that?
Of course. Forgive me, everyone, if I start coughing. It's so important, you know, like I mentioned earlier, the relationships and the emotional well-being of the adults who are caring for your children. So, you know, if they're seeing adults bickering or not speaking, children pick up on non-verbal body language, don't they? It affects them. It makes them unsettled. So just like in the home, you know, as Oliver was saying, if parents clearly detest each other, children are going to be affected by that. So it's so important that the adults that are caring for your children are, you know, relatively sane, are happy, have had their basic needs met. You know, do they ever get a break? Do they have a quick cup of coffee? Do they get to talk to each other during the day about things other than their work? So, look at the people. It doesn't matter how lovely the toys are. It's actually about the people that are going to be caring for your children.
And their well-being. So it's everybody's well-being that matters who's around your child.
And it makes sense. I mean, this is the thing about a lot of what we're talking about tonight. It's actually quite simple and it makes a lot of sense. I suppose the thing is just when you're in the throes of it all, remembering this stuff really, isn't it?
Lydia, you've got to get your Maslow hierarchy of needs on the fridge. We need fridge magnets made up.
Let's do it. I'm just having a read through it now, and I have to say there's bits of it that I find a little bit challenging. I don't know if I've got the intellectual ability for this. Transcendence, self-actualization.
Yeah, what do they mean really briefly, guys? Because people will be looking up the triangle. What is self-actualization? It means personal growth, does it?
I beg your pardon. It is defined. It is defined here on this link. I found this a website, and we'll put it on our Facebook
page.
We will explain it. You'll be able to click
to
it.
We'll get these guys to write an explanation.
All
right, thank you so much for joining us. There's never enough time when we have both of you on the show.
Absolutely.
And people, I'm sure, have been really, I've learned a lot from the chat. So thanks a lot.
Pleasure.
No problem. Thank
Pleasure,
you.
Pleasure, ladies.
Community Radio in West Hearts. Radio Verulam.
Neves Solicitors are proud to sponsor the Parent Show. The friendly team at Neves includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neves Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome back to the Parent Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, we've been talking about children's well-being and happiness and how to deal with that, specifically in early years. But actually, we've been talking more generally, haven't we, Cathy, about the subject? We'll have loads of links up on our Facebook page this evening. And please feel free to drop in there, answer the competition question to get a copy of Oliver James's book. And while you're in there, like us. And why not? And now, as usual, at this point of the show, we are going to do our update of what's on in association with Raring to Go. And we've got Claire Healy there to do it. How are you doing, Claire?
Oh, yes, I'm very well. Thank you. You?
Claire, you're always happy. What's the secret?
I'm always happy. I'm happy because I come in towards the end of your show. You're looking stressed. I'm very happy.
It's the end of the week,
and it's nearly half term for some, isn't it? So,
yeah,
not
for
me,
sadly. We
always have
this discussion every year. Is that something to celebrate? Is it? Are our children going to be busy?
Is it something to celebrate half term? Well, that's a different question from are our children going to be busy, isn't it, really? So, we'll run through it for all of those who are on holiday next week. Well, let's start with something that actually can link in quite well with your happy children. Tomorrow, a very good friend of mine, Pam Clark, who is a sleep expert, she is actually giving some child sleep advice, and it's not just to babies. She's doing it at the baby shop tomorrow between 10:30 and 12. If you've got any issues with sleep with your children, your toddlers, your babies, up to the age of about 11, I think teenagers she can't help with. go along and see and speak to her. She's giving free advice tomorrow morning at the baby shop on the Hatfield Road. I think it's the Hatfield Road, isn't it? Out of St. Albans. Go and have a chat with her then. And then on Saturday, you can go and pick up some bargains at the NCT sale. So that's the weekend covered. Now, next week is quite a big week. They've got this national thing on, which is the big draw. Now, the big draw, for those of you who don't know about it, it's a national event where they're basically encouraging kids to get involved in creativity. And the St. Albans Arts and Health group are organising the day on Saturday 27th, which is a week on Saturday, between 10:30 and 3:30. It's going to be a fantastic day. They've got all sorts of things. They've got bushcraft, they've got mapping illustrations, they've got clay creations, all sorts of things are happening in the city centre and in Verulamian Park and various other different places. So look out for them. There's some big posters. And again, all the stuff's on their own to go website, as it usually is. Just a quick few things just to give you some ideas for the half term then, Cathy, just to keep you happy. Hope you're writing them all down, as I see you
it's
are.
It's all about my well-being,
yeah,
Claire.
Of course
okay?
It is.
I'm writing
yeah.
them down. I've got my BlackBerry yeah. ready. I'm ready to note.
Okay, then. You can go down to, you can go and pick up a free pumpkin down at Willow's Farm. Willow's Farm doing free pumpkins for every child. So if you go before Wednesday, is it the 31st?
Right.
You can get your free pumpkin. You don't even need to go to the grocers to get it. And so that's happening all week from Saturday through to Sunday. There are some witchy stories going on because it's Halloween, of course, as well, next Sunday. Now, this is all a week on Sunday. I'm doing the big state schools half term at the Museum of St. Albans, stories for under sevens between 3 and 4 o'clock next Sunday. One thing which I think sounds quite good fun as well, slightly different, on Monday there are some Wildwood play schemes happening, but from Monday the 29th through to Thursday the 1st, I think it is. You can go for an AM or a PM session or all day, and there are various wooded locations throughout St. Albans and one in Watford. And you can learn to make dens, magic wands, clay modelling, whittling, all those sort of natural things that go on in the wild, which sounds quite good fun and sounds very appropriate with the Halloween coming up as well. There is a Halloween special for preschoolers. Crafts and Doodly Bugs are organising a craft event on Monday the 29th. That's down at, have a look on the Round to Go website for that one because the details are all on there. You could go up to Nedworth Park. They've got the pumpkin trail out and treats for the whole week up there. The actual house and the rest of the activities aren't open, but the pumpkin trail is. There are some activities going on at Burston's as well on the 31st. They've got some Halloween happenings between 11 and 3 with face painters and people like that. Lots of things going on there. And I think that's about it. Oh, one more thing. Halloween arts and crafts at the Inn on the Park on the 30th and the 31st. You need to book that. They've got lots of things happening, parties. They've got Wish Upon a Party down there. Be lots of fun, as it always is down at the Inn on the Park. And if I've got time to mention that they won family in the food and drink festival, family restaurant of the year.
Did they?
In the food and drink festival,
which
is fantastic.
Yeah. Inn in the Park.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely perfect. I mean, if you haven't been down there, it's just a great place to go because you've got the park right next to you. In the summer, there's a splash park. The rest of the time, there's the whole of the park to play in. So
they sell duck seed.
They sell all sorts, don't they? And they sell the most delicious hot chocolate and cakes and lunches.
And a little birdie
and wine.
Told me, actually, said that's what I was going to say to you next. Obviously, but you and me, Claire, it always degenerates
yes.
to wine.
Yes.
But now, one thing that was mentioned on our Facebook page, and obviously anybody who mentions anything on our Facebook page gets a mention because they've gone to the trouble of doing that. But Aldenham County Park have got a big pumpkin thingy going on this.
Have they?
Yes, they have indeed.
Ooh,
yes.
Fantastic.
So, I mean, they're doing lots of... Let me just get the details.
Well, is that free
yourselves.
Down there? Because that's a really good place to go, isn't it?
It's a huge
open air. Sorry.
Pumpkin carving is happening in Aldenham County Park from tomorrow, weekdays from 3:30, weekdays from 12 till 4 p.m.
Fantastic.
There you go. So if you
if you want to click through to their Facebook page from ours, they're there. Great stuff. So, and what about yourself? What are you doing half term? Are you running away from us, or what are you doing?
Am I running away from you? Of course, I'm not running away from you. No, we're here. Right. We're going to be doing a few Halloweeny things, I imagine, on Wednesday, whatever the date is. I think we've got a few costumes that are planned. I think the rest of the week is planning what they're going to be wearing to do their trick or treating.
Claire, what is the night they should be out trick or treating? Because I can never remember. So my kids are always either alone on the street or they've missed it.
I think the trick is, isn't it? Correct me if I'm wrong, it's the 31st, Halloween, and if you put a pumpkin in your window or outside your house, you're saying, yes, we've got sweets.
It's like
please
a red rag
in.
To a bull.
Yes, basically. Although I never put one on, and they always do knock on the door. But
yeah, all the houses where the lights are out, just ignore.
Yes.
Great stuff. And Cathy, next week's show, have we any news on there's been quite a few issues going on with Praywood School demonstrations and chats?
Well, we're going to be talking next week about primary schools subscriptions, about how oversubscribed the primary schools are in St Albans. So if that is an issue that interests you, do tune in next week or get in touch with us before then.
Great stuff. If you've got any issues you want us to be discussing. Yeah. And in 2 weeks' time, we're going to be talking to Sue Palmer, who is the author of Toxified Childhood.
Toxic Childhood,
that's it. Great. Well, thanks very much to our guests this evening. Thank you to Shirley Heyman of Riverbanks in Harpenden. Thank you very much to Sally Graham from the School of Education in University of Hertfordshire. And of course to Oliver James, who is the author of Love Bombing. All links and information will be on our website. Thanks for listening and all the very best.
Bye-bye.